This is Ann Weller with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And during the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest. Based in Washington, D.C., the Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. The center staff conduct innovative research and other programs in health and nutrition, and they provide consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The work of the Center for Science in the Public Interest is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding. A Nutrition Action Health Letter, first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The cover story of the October 2012 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter is entitled Going Organic, What's the Payoff? Sales of organic foods are growing by 10 to 20% each year in the United States. More than 10% of fruits and vegetables sold are now organic. By any measure, organic foods are starting to enter the mainstream American diet. And with good reason. Organic produce often has higher levels of potentially healthy compounds. And organic farms may fare better in droughts. They don't use synthetic fertilizers that contaminate groundwater. And they are more hospitable to critical pollinators like bees and butterflies. What is more, the data show that you reduce your exposure to pesticide residues when you buy organic foods, says organics expert Charles Benbrook. Dr. Benbrook is a research professor at Washington State University's Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources in Pullman, Washington. He has served as executive director of the Board on Agriculture of the National Academy of Sciences and as chief science consultant for the Organic Center, a research and educational organization. Dr. Benbrook spoke to Nutrition Action's David Shart by telephone from Troy, Oregon. Organic foods have higher levels of nutrients and phytochemicals than conventionally produced foods. In about 60% of the studies, organic food is higher in some nutrients than conventionally produced food. About 30 to 35% of the time, there is no statistical difference. And in 5 to 10% of the studies, the nutrient levels are higher in the conventional foods. That is based on studies that compare the same varieties of fruits and vegetables grown in similar locations, which is the ideal way to do these comparisons. In a recent Stanford University review, which claimed that organic produce is not more nutritious than conventional, only half of the studies were done that way. How much higher are the nutrient levels in organic foods? Generally about 5 to 15%, but they can be 30 or even 100% higher. In a 2-year study of tomatoes purchased in Barcelona markets published this spring, organic tomatoes had twice the level of some polyphenols as conventionally grown tomatoes. Now, polyphenols are antioxidants and may be one of the main reasons fruits and vegetables are healthy for us. So why do organically grown plants have more beneficial compounds? The two key factors are the stronger natural defenses of organic plants and a dilution effect in conventional plants. Plants in an organic field have to fend off a range of insects, so their natural defense mechanisms are turned on earlier and more fully manifest themselves. As a result, they have higher concentrations of defensive compounds that may keep us healthier. And the dilution effect? If you keep putting on more and more nitrogen fertilizer the way conventional farms do, you drive yields up and you produce bigger plants. But this dilutes the plant's levels of vitamins, minerals, and polyphenols. For example, in the fall, you see beautiful, huge apples in stores that are incredibly juicy and very sweet. Those apples were grown in conventional orchards where farmers have pushed up yields and pushed up sugar concentrations by using a lot of nitrogen and irrigation water. The trees have to do something with the extra nutrients, and the easiest thing is to convert them into sugars. These apples are juicy and sweet, yes, but the concentration of vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients in them goes down. And that is a classic example of the dilution effect. Does that affect shelf life? Yes. Take apples, for example. Organic apples store longer, and this has been shown all over the world. It is because they have got a higher concentration of antibacterial phenolic acids right under their skin, which helps to retard the growth of molds and bacteria that lead to spoilage. Conventionally grown apples have diluted levels of these natural antibacterial antioxidants. Plus, their extra nitrogen and sugar is exactly what the spoilage bacteria and molds need to grow. Well, what about contaminants that cause food poisoning? Well, both organic and conventional foods can be a source of food poisoning outbreaks. However, in an organic system, there is a much higher level of microbial biodiversity. So there are more naturally beneficial microbes in the system and the soil. Studies show that when you introduce pathogens into an organic system, they often do not survive very long because the biologically rich community of organisms that is naturally there either competes effectively with them or uses them for lunch. And in conventional plants? Pesticide use in conventional agriculture tends to reduce microbial biodiversity, both in the soil and on the surfaces of the plant. So when a pathogen does take hold, there's more of an ecological vacuum there, and the pathogen population can grow. Most bacteria need nitrogen, and a ready source of nitrogen can fuel spikes in their levels. So, in conventional systems that have an excess of nitrogen, there's extra gas that can drive up pathogen levels. Are organic foods pesticide-free? No. Although organic foods are grown without the use of synthetic pesticides, they can pick up traces blown in the air from conventional farms or from water or packing materials in processing plants. But are pesticide levels on organic produce much lower than on conventional? Yes, but if you measure the difference only in terms of the number of residues found, it's not nearly as dramatic as when you take into account the levels of the pesticides found and how toxic they are. We developed and computed a dietary risk index, or DRI, for the residues found in conventional versus organic strawberries, apples, grapes, blueberries, nectarines, pears, and peaches grown in the United States. The conventional fruits, DRI, or Dietary Risk Index, averaged 24, while the organic fruits, Dietary Risk Index, was only 3. And that is impressive. Since most consumers first seek out organic food to reduce pesticide risks, this shows that people get what they pay for. And imported produce is riskier. One of the big changes in pesticide risk over the past decade is that the difference between domestic and imported produce has grown. When the U.S. Congress passed the Food Quality Protection Act in 1996, which reformed pesticide use, about three-quarters of the dietary risk from pesticides in the food supply was from fruits and vegetables grown in the United States, and one-quarter was from imports. Now, however, probably 80% of the risk is from imports, and only about 20% is from domestically grown food. Today, the highest risk fresh fruits and vegetables almost across the board are imported, and consumers are exposed to these mostly from December through April. Why the change? Well, the Environmental Protection Agency implemented the Food Quality Protection Act mostly by restricting the use of pesticides in the United States. It reduced the numbers and rates of pesticide applications and lengthened the interval between the last application and the harvesting of food. And these changes lowered the dietary risk of domestically produced food, but they had no impact on the imports. Some of the differences are dramatic. The last time the government analyzed domestic and imported peaches for pesticides was in 2008. And if you calculate the dietary risk indexes for each sample tested, 98 of the 100 most risky peach samples were imported from Chile. One was from Argentina, and the other was from the United States. Of the 100 peaches with the lowest dietary risk indices, 99 were grown in the United States. So if I was a domestic peach grower and saw peaches high on a Dirty Dozen list, I would be pretty upset. The Environmental Protection Agency, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the United States Congress need to start driving down the high-risk residues in imported fruits and vegetables to at least match the reductions achieved by U.S. growers. How harmful are the traces of pesticides that are on conventionally grown foods? The evidence now is compelling that low-level exposure to organophosphate insecticides from food and the environment has been contributing to a suite of neurological and developmental problems, such as lost IQ points. These problems can be hard to measure in an individual, but are profound for society as a whole. David Bellinger of the Harvard Medical School published an important analysis this spring looking at the risk factors that contribute to lower IQs in children. He drew on high-quality studies that looked at medical conditions like preterm birth and pediatric bipolar disorders, and at the environmental contaminants, lead, mercury, and organophosphate insecticides. From these studies, he estimated that prenatal exposures to organophosphate insecticides were probably causing a greater loss of IQ points among some U.S. children, aged 5 and younger, than anything other than preterm births and lead exposure. While the risk to a given child is small, the exposure is so widespread that the risk to the population is substantial. The harm is primarily to children. Pound for pound, children are exposed to more pesticides than adults, and their developing bodies are more sensitive to the adverse effects of pesticides. That is why pesticide regulation must focus on protecting the developing fetus and to protecting children, especially during the first 2 years of life, but also through adolescence. The brain continues to grow and the nervous system continues to develop throughout the teenage years. What is the evidence of harm? Well, it is challenging to get proof of harm to children or adults. The most compelling evidence is for chlorpyrifos, an organophosphate insecticide. It is almost certainly the riskiest pesticide to humans that is still widely used on food crops. In two studies published last year, researchers followed 400 children born around the year 2000 to women living in New York City's low-income neighborhoods. Some of them lived in public housing projects where exterminators used chlorpyrifos to kill insects in the buildings. When the women gave birth, the researchers collected umbilical cord blood or urine to measure how much insecticide the fetuses were exposed to in the womb. And they've been tracking the children for 10 years now. The kids from mothers with the highest levels of chlorpyrifos or other organophosphates during pregnancy were at a greater risk for multiple developmental deficits, including slightly lower IQs when they were 6 to 9 years old. And in a similar study of California farm workers' families, children of mothers with the highest levels of organophosphates during pregnancy had IQs that were 7 points lower than the children of mothers with the lowest levels. One quarter of women of reproductive age in the United States in the year 2000 had average levels of organophosphates in their bodies comparable to the levels found in the high exposure group of women in the California farm worker study. Since 2000, the EPA has banned nearly all home uses of chlorpyrifos and has severely restricted most other uses of organophosphates in homes, other buildings, and urban environments. It now permits their use primarily in agriculture. So most of a woman's exposure now comes from food. It makes sense when you realize that a person eating 3 or 4 servings of vegetables a day is probably exposed to 3 or 5 or 6 organophosphates on a daily basis. And it is easy to understand how pregnant women could have these in their bodies. And very low levels may be harming their children. When researchers at Emory University in Atlanta gave children organic fruits and vegetables to eat instead of conventionally grown ones, chlorpyrifos fell to almost undetectable levels in their urine in just 5 days. Many experts are both puzzled and disappointed that the Environmental Protection Agency has not acted to end all the uses of chlorpyrifos that lead to residues in food or beverages. Given our deepening understanding of the many ways that chlorpyrifos exposures can disrupt normal fetal development, leading to cognitive deficits that could have serious lifelong repercussions. Now, residues in food rarely are high enough to pose acute risks to healthy adults. The concern for adults is with long-term degenerative diseases, such as cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and dementia. Much of the evidence of harm comes from studies on animals, or in farm workers, their families, and others, who face the greatest exposures and the greatest risks. But these studies raise concerns about the rest of us, who are exposed to lower levels. The evidence was strong enough for the President's Cancer Panel to recommend in 2010 that consumers choose, to the extent possible, food grown without pesticides or chemical fertilizers. And people who eat more fruits and vegetables are healthier even if they do not eat organic produce. That's why the single most important dietary change you can make is to eat more fruits and vegetables and less bad fat, less added sugar, and less highly processed foods. The second most important thing is to seek out organic fruits and vegetables. The EPA could reduce by one half or more the dietary risk in the United States food supply by selectively targeting just a few pesticides applied to no more than a dozen crops. Of the 200 pesticides found on our food, just 6 of them account for 66% of the total risk, and one of them is chlorpyrifos. Farming has never had a greater impact on the planet, says Derek Lynch, Canada Research Chair in Organic Agriculture and an associate professor in the Department of Plant and Animal Science at the Nova Scotia Agricultural College. There is a growing consensus, even within the synthetic fertilizer industry, that we cannot do business as usual, notes Dr. Lynch. We cannot sustain these huge impacts of conventional agriculture on biodiversity and on global warming anymore. Among the ways that organic agriculture is better for the planet is the nitrogen-sparing effect of organic farming. By saturating the earth with nitrogen fertilizer in order to boost crop yields, we have undertaken a massive global experiment during the past 60 years, says Dr. Lynch. Half or more of the nitrogen is wasted and escapes from the soil into groundwater and waterways, where it can contaminate drinking water and have devastating effects on ecosystems. But the yields of organic farming, which does not use synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, are somewhat lower, says Dr. Lynch. But the farms are not leaching nitrates into the local drinking water either. And people worry about the energy costs of transporting food from farm to fork, especially if the food travels long distances. But transport is a relatively small contributor to the energy footprint of most food, Dr. Lynch explains. Half or more of the carbon footprint of any agricultural product occurs at the farm level. For starters, producing nitrogen fertilizer has a huge energy cost, and manufacturing pesticides also has a significant cost. Organic farms usually come out ahead here because they just do not have those very large intensive energy inputs, says Dr. Lynch. Consumers in North America are concerned primarily about the health effects from pesticide exposure, but the impact on the local ecology is just as important, notes Dr. Lynch. His bottom line, organic farming systems are helping develop a new transformative form of agriculture that supports, rather than degrades, the health of ecosystems. It's hard to say what makes any one person overeat on any one occasion, but alcohol, sleep deprivation, and TV watching often create what researchers call an obesogenic environment. Researchers did a meta-analysis of 23 studies that measured how much people ate with or without alcohol, with or without TV, or with or without sleep deprivation. And alcohol had the greatest impact, followed by sleep deprivation. Among the possible explanations, alcohol, sleep deprivation, and watching images of palatable food on TV all boost levels of a hormone that stimulates appetite. What's more, all three may impair our inhibitions and intensify the response to food in the brain's reward center. So if you're trying to avoid overeating, get enough sleep and cut back on alcohol and TV. We've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. The show will be rebroadcast this week on Friday at 11 p.m. and on Saturday at 3 p.m. Please join me for the next edition of Nutrition News, which will air on Wednesday, December 7th, 2012. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I hope that you've enjoyed the show. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next month.